This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Software Society, Cultural and Economic Impact. And the author is William Mizell. And William joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Bill.
How are you, Steve?
Great to have you with us. This is your focus for many, many years. You've been working as a professor at USC. You've managed a computer science division of an aerospace company. Your expertise is in the software side, though you understand both hardware and software sides of this very critical part of today's life, a critical industry, and of course the title of your book, The Software Society. Why did you see a need to do this?
Well, I think there's really two aspects of what drove me to do this. One is that the connection that we're achieving with computers today is getting closer and closer, particularly because of the advances in language technology. By that I mean things like speech recognition and language understanding, a good example being Apple Siri, where you simply tell it what you want and it tries to do it for you. So, you know, the general term for that kind of functionality, personal assistant, I think conveys what we really want from computers. I mean, it's been part of science fiction for a long time, the Star Trek computer and so forth.
Right.
And that's, you know, sort of the ideal. And because it's becoming more real than people realize, I wanted to make sure that the importance of that big change in our connection with computer intelligence was recognized on the one hand. On the other hand, I also saw that there were some downsides to the rapid advances in technology that software makes possible, and those could have some economic impacts. Some of them are positive, new business opportunities and so forth, but some of them also automate away jobs and can create problems in the economy. So that motivated me to kind of look at both sides of the coin.
Well, you ask an interesting question, one of the themes of your book. What it means to be human, is technology part of us? Of course, from just a simplistic point of view, that makes us almost human today, all this technology.
That's right. We don't think about it that way, but, all throughout history, technology has changed what it means to be human. I mean, just going back to the time when farm machinery and transportation made it possible for people to move to cities, and you know, a city life is completely different than a farming life. Then you know, all these other technology innovations. We don't think anything about going 10 miles to go to a big sale at a store or something today. But if you were going to walk that distance, it would make a big difference. The whole human experience is built around technology. I mean, some of it's very intimate in the sense that, technology makes possible clothes, for example, and very few of us would walk out of the house without clothes. Certainly what it means to be human is very much tied up with technology. And software is everywhere today. I mean, software is in our thermostats, and in, our cars, and in our TV sets, and our PCs, and our mobile phones, and that software can be changed very quickly. And that's really changing how fast technology changes. Some of these historical changes that we've adapted to over time, such as the change from agricultural to an urban community, changed very slowly. But technology is changing very quickly, and that's really changing sort of how fast we can change our connection to that technology, but also how difficult it is to adapt an economy to it as quickly as it changes.
and how it's changing society because of the young generation. That's all they know is technology.
Oh, that's right. I have some young nieces. One just turned 5, and another one's about to turn 3. And I get pictures from their mother of them each holding their own iPad. They're growing up just knowing intuitively how to use this stuff.
And so it's changing life dramatically compared to when you and I grew up, obviously.
Absolutely.
Dramatically. And, of course, that has a great impact on every aspect of life. The current economic recession, now, why are you looking at that in your book?
Well, I think we keep hearing about things that are getting a little better, but some of it is just giving us time to solve the core problem. The core problem is that jobs are not being created fast enough, and even the ones that are being created are often jobs that people take that are at lower salaries than they took before. The median income of in America is down 5% from the start of the recovery, not from the beginning of the recession, but from the start of the recovery. So this is a sort of a recovery which is not only sort of a jobless recovery, but also a recovery which has been called in some other books the hollowing out of the middle class. And that's just critical to what America means and to basically to the whole economic structure around the world. So I'm very concerned that we look at what's happening with what I would call over-automation. Automation, which improves productivity, is pretty critical to an economy. It sort of has meant in the past that, you know, fewer people could produce more product, and therefore you could pay them more, and the economy could produce more with the same number of people. It's all been good, but there gets to be a point at which if you give people better tools and make them more productive, you can pay them more. That has all the benefits. If you replace people with automation, then you've got some problems. I mean, if there's nobody around to buy anything, it doesn't make any difference how economically you produce it. I'm not the only one that's been concerned about this. There's a couple of MIT professors that put out a book a couple of years ago called Race Against the Machine, where they were worrying about what happens when there's not enough jobs. So you'll hear more and more about that, I think. But I try in my book to point out that if you're running a company, it makes all the sense in the world to avoid hiring people, because we've structured our tax system and a lot of other things to make people a kind of a burden in a way from a company's point of view, in the sense they have to pay payroll taxes. Now they have to give the medical insurance because of the new health care bill. People have all kinds of rights that computers don't. If you hire a computer, right, you can expect it to get a salary cut every year because computers get cheaper every year, in a sense. So, I mean, we have to find a way to make hiring people more competitive with hiring computers.
We hear a lot in the news about cyber warfare. We're concerned about our security with all our personal information. How do you see that?
That's obviously a critical problem, and I don't think one that's easily solvable. But I think it's nothing new in the sense that we always had issues with any new technology, but this in particular, because so much is dependent on software, including running our electrical stations and a lot of critical facilities, it's a real problem. And of course, you've heard in the news that the government is trying to address it, but it's a very difficult problem. I don't see any easy solution to that. I think it's one of those things like mutually assured destruction. Sooner or later, each country has to try to crack down on the people within these countries that are doing that, and do it because they don't want the other country to be doing it to them. I don't really see an easy solution. But, unlike the issue of jobs not being there. I don't know exactly what the average person can do about that. That's something we have to count on our governments to address.
Now, what about software patents, the problems with the patent system?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this well-publicized cases of, for example, Apple suing mobile phone manufacturers basically over the Android operating system. So saying basically that Google stole Apple's idea for the iPhone and phones based on Android are violating Apple patents. And, that's sort of the one of the more obvious things. Another problem with the patent system is software patents where companies that are non-practicing entities, what are often called patent trolls, make a business out of suing over patents, which adds the cost of doing business, and which can be very tough on startups. A big company has a big legal staff and they just spend their time dealing with these things. A smaller company, it can be a very substantial part of your cost if someone sues you. So the idea of software patents where there's patents on things like sliding to unlock your phone, which is a feature of the iPhone, for example, things like that you would think shouldn't be patentable are, unfortunately, there's many, many patents like that that seem intuitive. I mean, the idea of a picture of a slide switch being used as a switch, is that something that should be patentable? So those are issues that are very difficult to address, but I do suggest in the book some approaches that might make the problem less.
You've made a comment of the incredible impact technology has on the young, and of course, in today's age, with the education system, the early education system, what do you see there, the challenges, the problems there?
The real problem that I see in the classroom is that classrooms are almost unmanageable. The teachers have a huge burden. I mean, and they're talking about seeing which teachers are good or bad based upon test results. But the real issue is that kids come into classrooms at much different levels. One kindergarten teacher told me that she had kids come into her classroom that couldn't speak English, and other kids that were reading at third grade level because their parents were aggressive about getting them ready for school. How's the teacher deal with that problem? And if you don't solve the problem at the early grades, statistics show that tends to propagate through the rest of a child's educational life. There's an area where technology can make a big difference. If each kid had a tablet computer and could proceed at their own pace and be helped by the teacher specifically with problems they had that were clearly evident by their pace at using the software on the tablet computer, just to take an example, then I think you'd see a tremendous improvement in education. And kids would probably think of this the work as a game, because they associate things on things like pad computers as games. So the whole attitude towards school might change. But getting that kind of technology into the schools and getting it adopted and changing the school system will require a lot of effort from all of us to promote it and to try to get more money to go into education.
What is an automation tax?
Yeah, that was the solution that I suggested for this problem of a jobless recovery. Essentially, an automation tax, if I want to oversimplify it, is something like a payroll tax on computers, but it's not, of course, done that way. What it does is it looks at those companies that generate the most revenue per employee and taxes them at a higher rate than companies that use more people to get the same revenue. So what that does is it encourages people when they have a choice to say, okay, I'd rather hire a person and make them more effective than just replace a person, because that's going to cut my automation tax. It doesn't force them to do that, but it gives them an incentive to hire people over computers. And that's the way we've always used the tax system. We encourage home ownership by giving a mortgage tax and so forth. Now, I recognize that with our current political system, getting anything called a tax through Congress would be tough. But on the other hand, I hope that it's not, that those kinds of changes aren't forced on us by a double dip recession. I'd like us to be more intelligent about trying to do those things before we're forced to.
I'm sure that given your experience in this field, you see nothing but acceleration in more and more of computer assistance, technology, software, hardware. Everything is going to grow at an accelerated pace.
Yeah, I think the key thing that will drive a lot of this is being able to deal with your computer through language, either typing or speaking. The direction, I just blogged on my blog. I have a blog associated with the book, which not surprisingly is called thesoftwaresociety.com. And I just blogged on what I think Apple's going to do. I think that the next big thing Apple's going to do, for example, to give an example of this kind of what the technology can do for us, is basically extend Siri to all its products. So you have the same personal assistant available to you on all your devices, and it even knows when you're on one device about another. So, for example, if you were sitting at your PC, you could say, tell Siri to text somebody a mess. Text Steve that I'm running late for my interview.
Mm-hmm.
and have it do that through your mobile phone. I mean, that kind of integration,
right,
where instead of fighting to figure out how to do all these things on all these devices, we basically have one integrated interface across devices, what I call a ubiquitous personal assistant. I think that's really going to change technology and the way we interact with it, and also make it more like a friend or a pet that we really can't do without.
Well, make it a real assistant, like you're pointing out. Make it that Siri becomes part of our life.
That's right, an assistant that you don't mind telling what to do, because it doesn't get insulted when you ask it to do that. That's what it likes to do.
Well, thank you very much, Bill, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. Now, tell us how to get your book, The Software Society. William Mizell is the author.
Yes, The Software Society is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual places.
Well, thank you for being with us again.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Guide, Ways to Succeed. And the author and poet is Margaret A. Rosenberger. And Margaret joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Margaret.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. 32 years in teaching. Well, we salute you for that.
Thank you.
That's tremendous. 32 years, and you love to write poetry. How long have you been doing it?
Since I was about 10 years of age.
10 years of age.
I started writing poetry.
And you have fine-tuned it. You're very, very good with a lot of lessons about all kinds of things about life. Let me read what you've written about your book, kind of set the stage for our discussion. You say this, A Guide, Ways to Succeed is a book of character-building poetry that specifically addresses young people, but its principles and lessons apply to all ages throughout life. Many of the poems are based on a survey that was completed by the pupils where they indicated their interests. And you point out, we need to listen to the students. And of course, that first poem that you wrote for the book, What Interests the Youth, won an award. What award did it win?
Well, actually, I received $150 for it in a contest.
Okay.
And that was exciting to read it and hear the people respond to the interests of the youth. It was unbelievable somehow that the positive things and the priority things that the youth wanted.
This came from the youth. You had a survey done, and this is the information from the survey. You wrote the poem?
Yes.
Why don't you share that with us?
I'd be glad to. What interests the youth? The youth were asked to complete a survey so that leaders would be able to show them the way. It is hoped that the legislators will give of their time, and the support of foundations and benefactors will fall in line. The most important subject to the youth was to learn more about good nutrition and snacks, if you want the truth. The second subject about which the youth wanted to learn was the dangers of drugs, tobacco, and alcohol, a great concern. The third item of interest was to learn about sports. They wanted to learn the rules and regulations on the fields and courts. The fourth highest interest was learning how to bank, how to make deposits, write checks, and how their credit might rank. Of course, the youth wanted to learn how to type, learn bookkeeping skills, and learn how to write. They would like instruction on how to build a house and administer first aid. They'd like to learn how to care for the sick and how to accept counseling when they have strayed. They'd like to learn how to care for someone who is ill, how to bathe or walk with one and others' needs to fill. They'd like to learn to give a Heimlich maneuver and CPR. They'd like to learn how to check information on the Internet from near and far. Trades and crafts, the recreation centers should teach. How to cook, set a table, and learning good manners should be within reach. The youth would like to learn ways to stay out of jail, how to be a witness, or how to go on one's bail. They'd like to learn Spanish, how to read and speak, and learn vocational skills for a future job they might seek. They'd like to learn parenting skills, school rules, and about the PTA. And how to sew, patch, and care for clothes in a special way. The youth would like to learn art, folk, and patriotic songs. They'd like to visit and study the homeless and help AA members to be strong. They'd like to take field trips to correction and juvenile institutions and learn more about religion, how religion can inspire to make good resolutions. Then let the educators and testers learn from the youth and plan the curriculum that will reach them in truth. As we listen to our youth and what's on their mind, their response might mean less violence, drugs, and crime.
Well,
that was it.
Well, that's why this is called a guide. You covered just about everything there, and that was. It's interesting too when rhythm and rhymes are used. Individuals seem to pay closer attention, and even can remember it better.
Yes, I tried that on a number of students when I was principal, as well as when I was a teacher. And I'd list the things that they knew about, for example, turtles. I wrote a poem about those. And they listed five or six things they knew about turtles. And when I finished, I said, now what did you learn? And they listed two or three pages of ideas and thoughts that they had learned from my reading the poetry.
Well, and we know that from youth because they love music and they can pretty much sing every song that's popular.
That's right. Even the TV ads.
Even the TV ads. So that, you know, very smart way to help students learn some principles and lessons about life. And that's what your book is all about. This guide, Ways to Succeed. Why don't you tell us about one, share one about bullying? I mean, that is a unfortunate problem today, and the title of it is Don't Ever Be a Bully.
I'd be glad to do that. There are many policies and rules to make sure you and others are safe, free, and secure. Then study, learn, and obey them so that peace and fulfillment for all will endure. Don't you ever be a bully. Let me tell you why. You'll look like a monster who doesn't care if others hurt, cry, or die. Bullying and harassment can inflict hurt and cause others to have psychological distress. Stalking, written, or oral expressions can even bring about punishment or arrest. There's no place for using dehumanizing gestures. Avoid causing anyone discomfort or performing a humiliating act. Refrain from making teasing or insulting remarks. Excluding anyone socially is no way to interact. Refrain from doing damage to destruction of property. And yes, cyber stalking and cyberbullying are wrong. As we are making threats or using intimidating speech to a good citizen, they do not belong. Avoid all violence that is physical. Defrauding and theft are also criminal acts, as harassment that are sexual, religious, or racial. Avoid possible trouble by learning the legal and moral facts. Remember that no one is quite like you. Each one is miraculously unique. No one has the same fingerprints, mind, or body. So appreciate the differences in every relationship you might see. Kind words and acts will never die, few though they be. Tell a person if you like what she or he has done. You'll be glad you did. You'll see. Now, if you should become a victim of or the subject of a bully, report him or her to your parents, guardian, teachers, principal, and or adult friend. There are consequences for all such offenses, so be vigilant and be aware of those who are guilty and willfully offend. Investigations of reported criminal acts will be made. Law enforcement agencies should be called in. Each one will be given due process, whether a student, teacher, pastor, friend, or kin. The rights of students, parents, and school employees are protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution. Since each life has a meaning and purpose, set high goals for yourself and let this be your resolution. Don't ever be a bully. Always stay in control of your body, mind, and soul. Remember, half of success is a good try. Then use your talents and aim high. You can be happy and successful by and by.
All I can say is amen. What a great job. Fantastic. Scores and scores of poems in this book, A Guide, Ways to Succeed. So through the years, you have written these from time to time. Is that how you've collected them all?
Well, actually, I initiated, I guess I should say, the children's committee that we had back in the 50s and had a number of citizens in the community come together, the police departments and guidance counselors and all areas of work, ministers, and we discuss the problems that we have about the youth and how many they are committing crimes and violence and so on in the schools too. And so after we had a number of meetings, we had the survey, and when the children and youth were asked to complete the survey, the poems were composed and then chaired with a small committee. And then this whole small committee made other suggestions and edited the, and word by word, the poems that I had written. And then they were compiled and put in the book. And for hopefully that will go out into all the schools and wherever they are, into the homes and churches and synagogues, where they might have have open suggestions for the discussions for the children and youth. And we hope that they could go into the juvenile detention centers too, so that they could be character building poems that they might listen to and discuss and agree or disagree on parts of them. It would be a positive approach to education.
Before we hear a closing poem, just some other ones, just in random selection here. Are you ever bored? Do you know what to suggest to someone who's having a baby that she can't take care of? If someone you know is addicted to drugs, do you know what to tell him or her? What would you tell a young person how senior citizens like to be treated? You know, you have talk about making hard decisions. You talk about police and how they should be treated. If you know someone who's in an abusive relationship or is being abused, you know, you have a poem about that. So you have a lot of real life situations, problems, and also a lot of encouragement. Let's kind of finish on this one, Road to Success.
If we think of a mountain as a road to success, we'll keep trudging along uphill. We'll take time to sigh and a time to rest, find peace in our hearts, and share goodwill. We may twist and turn as we continue on. Cares may press down a bit. Things may go wrong sometimes, but to succeed, we rest but never quit. Success is leading and following. Success is failure turned upside down. Success is appreciating those who help. Success is working with no thought of a crown. Millions may stay at the base of the mountain. Fear and doubt may make them stop. But success comes to those who continue to climb, and along the way, all who help reach the top.
We've been listening to poet Margaret A. Rosenberger. Again, her book, A Guide, Ways to Succeed. Margaret, tell us how to get your book.
It's in the bookstores, and it's available on the internet. I notice that a number of the different media on the internet has listed them there and how you can get them. And I have some, too, for local people who would like to have a copy in Gainesville and Micanopy areas and Ocala. And they're very reasonable. They're only $14.99 plus tax of 6% in Florida. And we'd be glad to share a copy with anyone who would like one. And I hope that it will get out into the schools, as I mentioned, into the churches and synagogues, and that it will have a way to help turn some of the youth around and make them think and perhaps avoid going into crime. And a whole part of our essay for our meetings was to rescue and keep youth from crime. And this book is guided and written in keeping with thoughts along those lines. And it's been placed in Reichert House. They have been using it in Gainesville, Florida. And it's recently had some good results from the youth who graduated from that school. And I think that they've been reading, from what I understand, a copy of the poems once a week and then discussing them. And I'm very happy that they have done that. It's been a revelation to see how different ones react to the poems. And I think that if they get into the schools and to the churches and different places where the Bible has been taken out of the schools, that this could be a very positive book to help give the children and youth some ideas about how to go about life and how to continue making a success of their lives and perhaps keep them in trouble, keep them out of trouble. And it's a joy to see what has happened to some of the youth who've had poetry and rhyming and the effect that it's had on some of them and how they do pay attention to this kind of media.
Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed being with you, and I hope you success, and I hope that the book meets with success, too. A Guide Ways to Succeed, and it's full of poems that can help in life-changing ways. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ellie Loprete. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding Your Peace, 32 Principles to Help You Live Your Calling. And the author is Julie Corinne. And Julie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Julie.
Aloha.
Yes, aloha. You in Hawaii, I'm in Texas, and you've got great things to help us with. Find our calling, very important. You say, you know, you can open up this book at any chapter and get a gem of wisdom that can apply to life immediately. That's so important in today's fast-paced world to get some motivation, to get some direction. These 32 principles, we'll talk about some of them. But first of all, let's find out about you and how all this came about.
So the book came about, I was living in Chicago, and I hit what I call a frustrating event, or I was in a sort of just restlessness of the soul part of my life. And so I went to a retreat in Maui called Excuses Beyond by Wayne Dyer. And there was a certain point in the conference where I was came up to the microphone because he asked people to come up and say what their calling was in life and the excuse that they were using for not doing it. So I went up there and I told him that my calling in life was to write a book and speak around the world, and the excuse I tell myself is I'm too young. Needless to say, Wayne Dyer flipped my thinking from I'm too young to I'm at the perfect age. So I went home from this retreat in Maui, and I went home to Chicago, sold all my stuff, closed down my company, and moved out to Maui with two bags and the material that I started for the book, and was determined to write the book, heal my life, and then go out and give this gift to others. So it's kind of a crazy story, but and now there are some really, really great things happening because I moved in the direction of what my calling was pushing me towards. So that's how it began, and now it's a whole new journey that is, you know, taking some amazing steps that I'm just looking and allowing to happen. So,
well, one of your reviews from Robert Jordan, author of How They Did It, Billion Dollar Insights from the Heart of America, he says, Julie is a guardian angel, a true coach and teacher, and she puts the whole of her incredible and wonderful spirit into this thoughtful and timeless compendium for success and fulfillment. Wow, what a sentence. That's loaded.
That's an incredible review. And Bob Jordan is an amazing entrepreneur. He actually created what I think the next book is for Think and Grow Rich is for the Midwest. And he collected all these entrepreneurs who have made millions of dollars, started from nothing, and created million-dollar companies. And so getting a review like that from him is pretty awesome. And he is quite the entrepreneur himself.
So what makes your book so unique compared to other self-help books?
Oh, what makes my book so unique is that there is a structure. There's 32 principles, and that's the structure. But there's so much freedom within that structure in order to live your calling. Because sometimes people think it's just this, like, this one thing. Well, it's accumulation of really being able to focus the mind, which is 8 principles of the mind. Be lean in the body, so really take care of your body. Inspire or ignite your spirit and listen to your soul, so the GPS system, your soul. So it's all 32 of them. So the point is that you can work on each one of those, and it doesn't have to necessarily be in a linear fashion, because life is not linear. Our brain doesn't work linear. But the thing is that you have the ability to kind of create your own style of really learning to master those 32 principles. So that's what I love about it, because each person gets to harness and do each one of the 32 principles how they feel is supposed to, how it's supposed to kind of line up for them in their life. Because you really can't take a person and move them down a linear fashion, because that's just not how life is. So that's what I get so excited about, is that people have the ability to find their own unique and creative way to master those 32 principles, and inevitably, that is definitely the most direct way to put your puzzle piece in the puzzle, or what that's the representation of living your call.
Well, we all know that life today especially is filled with stress. Stress is the number one killer. And you've got a way for us to, I guess, just live life according to your calling, and all that stress really goes away, because if you love what you do, you don't have the stress.
Oh, that is so true. And I think one of the principles in the book, and it's actually in the body section, is called posture. And the way that I describe posture, even though I'm a personal trainer and I help people really align their body so that everything, you know, their muscles are in alignment and they really have good posture so they can walk around and be healthier, that book, that chapter is actually a lot about lifting your chest up and leading your life with your heart and not your head. And so that's what I think of when you're just talking, is that, you know, when you really lift up your heart and you let your heart lead the way in your life, it's such an easy way to really enjoy your life. But what comes out of enjoying your life and doing what you love is that internal peace. And that is what is priceless. And so it's one little tool that I tell people is roll your shoulders back, lift your chest up, and let your heart lead the way. Just shift your head back a little bit, and you'll find a lot of peace when you are letting your heart guide your life.
Well, as someone said, we've got to stand up a little taller and lift our eyes. I think that's what I hear you say. When you lift your eyes, you start seeing the horizon. You know, it's you're not looking at the ground anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
So your book is broken down into three acts, but in act two, you have mind principles, body principles, spirit principles, and soul principles. And of course, that makes up the 32 principles, 8 principles in each one of these sections. So pick out a couple of these chapters that, you know, in the time we have, just to kind of give us a little insight, give us a little depth on what this means.
Okay. One of the most important principles, which I absolutely love and I feel like is essential to mastering the other 31 or all 32, is presence. And presence is the second principle of the mind. And I think being able to really master being in the present moment is something that we sometimes take for granted. You know, the past is the past. The future we have no control over. So really being in that present moment, one, gives you peace right away. And then two, it really allows you to take the baby steps that you need to take in order to live out your calling. And so if somebody could say, hey, you can only pick one of your principles, I would absolutely 100% pick presence. And the way that I have learned to really master that principle is by attaching an action to it that reminds me to live it throughout my day. So every time I smile, I think to myself, now is now, and I'm just going to focus on what I have right in front of me. And so what I encourage people to do is to pick an action step that reminds them to be present. So it may not be smiling, but I want people to kind of have their own style of mastering this principle. So I invite people to pick something that reminds them to be present, and I think that is just one of those essential principles to help us move our lives forward and live out our calling.
You've been talking about the body. You help people lose weight, get healthy?
Absolutely. I have been in the health and fitness arena for 10 years. And so I think it's really important to take care of our body, because our body is what carries us to be able to do our calling. And it's also, we need to have that energy. We need to feel well-rested. And so all 8 of the principles in the body really do help you to live a lean life. And when you're living a lean life and a balanced life, you automatically will, if you are a little bit overweight, you will lose weight. And they're really, really simple things. So I always say I teach fitness. I don't do fitness, I teach it. So, you know, making sure that people have enough water and enough daily activity, learning to eat well and learning to sleep well. All of those things are really, really simple. But once they're harnessed and once they become habits, you'll automatically be at a healthy weight, which will give you energy, which will also inspire you to go out and live your calling. So everything is so intricately connected in order to really drive forward in a healthy manner.
Well, it's so important to find out our purpose in life. So many people are just floundering through life, not knowing why they're here, and that is so critical.
It really is a critical thing. I found over the years, actually, when I started off just in health and fitness and personal training and really working with clients, I found that if, you know, you could spend an hour really working out on their different habits to become to live a healthier life, but they were living 8 hours at work, and being inspired and really doing what you love affected their health. And that's part of what spurred me writing the book. And so, you know, when you're really doing what you love, it brings you that internal peace. And I think one of the things that people sometimes struggle with, and if they're struggling, I know what it feels like. They feel that restlessness in the soul, like, I should be doing something else, but I'm not doing it. And it just feels like, you know, a tug of war inside, internally. And I think that one really, really simple thing is just to spend a little bit of time, spend a half hour, an hour, and write down what you really want to be doing. Write down what you're naturally talented at, what's so easy for you, and how you can serve other people in only the way that you can do it. And I think when people spend a little time to figure out what that is, set some goals and start moving in that direction, it's so much easier than what our brain sometimes tries to overanalyze and think it could be. And so that's just one simple way of helping people really honor their calling, honor their heart, and then of course, the internal peace arrives from that space.
And let God lead your life.
Yes, 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 absolutely. It's absolutely essential. We are so small compared to the universe. This, our one person, our one being is so small, and God knows everything. He created the universe. He knows it all. When we surrender to God and we acknowledge Him in our lives and we let Him lead our lives and humbly become a servant of God, and you ask Him to guide you in your calling, He will every single time be there to guide you. And that's where the miracles show up. Wow, stuff that we know that we couldn't do on our own, He will place in front of us, and then all you have to do is accept it and keep acknowledging Him, and accept it and keep acknowledging Him, and God will lead our lives. And it will be beyond what you can even imagine. And that's the great thing of really having faith in something outside of us.
So take time, as you say, to honor your purpose, and you will be surprised what will happen with that one single habit. So tell us about taking time to honor our purpose.
Well, I think a lot of times there's so much social media and there's so much marketing coming at us, and then there's also other people's agendas, you know, and other people have things that they're running and they need your time. Well, if you don't take a little bit of time to honor what you really want and stand strong in that space by doing things, so say, for example, for me, for writing, spending time writing and, you know, spending time putting workouts together that I want to create to help other people, I could easily have other people ask me, oh, Julie, can you do that? Oh, Julie, can you do that? And the next thing you know, you'll be going around helping a bunch of other people or be sucked into a bunch of marketing, and you didn't spend any time honoring what only you were made to do. So that's why I feel so important to take some time for yourself and spend an hour, spend a couple hours cultivating and creating what only you can do. And from there, then your purpose will start rolling forward. But it's really important to stand strong and honor what you know that only you can do and to serve other people.
We've been listening to Julie Corinne. She is the author of her book, Finding Your Peace, 32 Principles to Help You Live Your Calling. Julie, tell us how to get your book.
You can get Finding Your Peace at www.juliecorinne.com. And it's also available on Balboa Press if you're looking for the ebook. But those are the two places that you can receive the book.
Well, thank you so much, Julie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much. And mahalo.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.